All right, folks, welcome into the Extra here. Beautiful Friday morning. We are getting down to it. We're skipping through all the minutia, and we're talking about the National Association of Realtor deal. You see all these different news articles, all these different opinions. And so I said, we got to get this topic. We're going to do this show this Friday and then the following Friday. I'm fortunate enough to have Patrick Muldoon on the show with me today. Patrick, thanks for coming in.
Thank you. I appreciate you having me.
Yeah, you got it. So a little background for the listeners, so they don't think it's just some Joe Schmo I pulled off the street.
Right.
How long you been in business, your company, what you guys do, and your involvement in the community of realtors.
Yeah, sure. So I appreciate you having me, first of all. And believe it or not, this will be my 30th year in real estate. I will be celebrating 30 years in November. I got licensed in 1994. And I came on board at our family-owned and operated company, Muldoon Associates.
Yeah. You should have more gray hair.
I should have
that a long lot. In the business? How are you aging?
I don't even know. I just had my 50th birthday this weekend. You know, we're just like cranking. I imagine I'd look a lot better if I wasn't in real estate. So when I first got into the business, property management, we've always done property management. Mm-hmm. We're family-owned and operated. Dad opened the company in 1980. 10 years later, my brother follows me. I go into sales. He takes over property management. If you've ever done property management, there's a definite personality difference there. Sales, I was more suited for.
Yeah, and you guys service Pueblo as well.
We do. So we've got two offices, yeah. One here, that's 40 years, and we opened the one in Pueblo around 2001.
Okay, because this reaches all the way down to Pueblo. So
we're covering
awesome
both
too,
counties.
Now, and I'm going to have you touch on Pueblo market.
Be happy to.
You know, later on in the show and stuff like that. And you got your office located off Academy.
Been there for 25, 30 years, and then Pueblo, we're off Elizabeth, so we've been there for 20. We bought that building in 2001.
Yeah.
Servicing property management and sales in both towns, so we've got a pretty good feel on what's going on in the different communities. And honestly, the real estate markets are very different right now. So
yeah,
and
the rental market too.
I mean, same thing. Yeah,
that you know that's up and down, and there's a lot of changes at the state level. We'll talk about
property management, yeah. Landlord changes, mm-hmm. which my brother heads that department up. He's very involved in the property management landlord advocacy side, mm-hmm. because if you're a landlord, as you know, there's a target on your back, right? You're rich.
You're a capitalist.
You're a capitalist, and we're going to fix that. And that's not a political statement. I don't want anybody to be offended and turn this off right away, right? And go, oh, we're out. But the fact of the matter is, if you own properties in Colorado Springs and across the state, these changes for landlords are something you need to be aware of.
Yeah, and it's a quick change too, because it's stuff I've touched on it before, that it's not like the legislation just going, hey, these are some changes we came up with. They're going to California, they're going to Maryland, they take these different
Seattle.
They're stealing them and going, okay, let's try them here because this might help the affordability. And you go, I don't know, when government gets involved, it seems to make it worse.
We don't have any examples where affordability became more affordable because government implemented affordability rules, right? There are none. The largest increased and highest prices are in affordable fixed states. And that's just what occurs. It makes people leave those areas and go invest elsewhere. So you end up actually shrinking your properties as landlords move. And we're seeing that. We're seeing landlords go, that's it. We're going to
1031 exchange
right
go
into
to
a different
state
that's more landlord friendly. And what does that do? It shrinks our properties, and so there's less to pick from, which typically would push pricing up, which California sees. And so then they come in and they fix it with, well, we're just going to do fixed rents, and you can't raise it over CPI, and you just get crazier. But Colorado has out California'd California. I mean, some of our laws are in line or worse than what California's done with their housing market these subjects.
Well, at least the one that just went through, the Just Cause Eviction?
Just Cause Eviction.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I mean, you're going to have a lifetime tenant. I mean, that's kind of where that's headed, right?
Yeah, but you see where it was, you know, at the beginning of this bill, it's even scarier where they wanted these, you know, relocation costs, 2-3 months rent.
Yeah.
And they took that right out of California. Yep. And so at least that didn't pass, but you go, I mean, the fact that even somebody was thinking that is scary.
Well, and I just got back from California. So we went out there for my birthday, and my best friend owns a triplex out there. So we were discussing this topic, because he's a native of Colorado Springs, with what he has to deal with his triplex. He's just outside.
It's in
Studio City, just outside of LA.
Okay.
He's had tenants there for 20 years. He bought the building with the tenants there. The tenants have been there, and he can't really raise the rents over an adjusted amount for CPI. Now, the interesting thing is then it breaks down into zoning, code, and a bunch of other factors. But the fact of the matter is his rentals currently, because of price fixing, as a landlord, he can't raise them to market value. If one of his tenants moved out, he would be making about $1,000 more a month per unit, but he can't. So that is stuff we're dealing with here, which is what's free market value. Well, I mean, the market kind of dictates that. And yes, for the last 4 or 5 years, it's been hard on tenants, and we understand
it's been
that.
Hard on homeowners.
My goodness, insurance, I mean, if you're trying to buy, this is a problem. But the fact of the matter is, during the 2008 debacle, right, that also doesn't happen because they can't lower rents either. So you don't have a real dichotomy in the rental market. It starts to erase that where you don't have these highs and lows. But also, if you're a landlord, you're just not going to be able to increase your rent if we keep going the way California does. You're going to be like, oh, CPI's 2, and I can only go up 3 above CPI. So maybe this year I only get 5%, despite market value in other buildings might have gone up 8, 9%. Yeah. You know, there's a real risk to owning a property.
Oh, there is. And no one thinks about, hey, the landlord's got insurance has gone up, taxes have gone up. Oh, you own a multifamily unit, you're paying the water bill. Oh, that's probably doubled.
Competition among apartments coming online, right? And so as a landlord, you're trying to gauge this risk. And the 1031 allows you to just move that. And I've had 3 or 4 properties in the last year just go, look, we're going to move this to a different state. I've got
Florida,
a couple.
Tennessee.
Florida, Oklahoma.
Yeah.
You know, you've got some good states out there that are at least more neutral, and people are trying to find those states.
It's funny because I did a show once on the political divide in real estate, and there's a lot of migration going to red states. It's interesting.
Yeah. I mean, you have a net loss from California, right? And the net loss is going to Florida and Texas. I mean, that's just statistically, Florida and Texas right now are the big net gainers in the country. You know, that's saying something that obviously appeals to a lot of people when they're like, well, here's a different kind of freedom, maybe.
Yeah.
Different kind of laws regarding properties, property management, ownership. Now, some of those areas like Florida, though, they've got the same problems. They've got the insurance issue.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh,
you could own your house free and clear and beat. But then when we were in California, I ran into this realtor out there. We stopped in. We were up in Bel Air, so it's a pretty rich area, right?
Yeah.
And we were just looking at the big houses like everybody does. I was like that guy on a motorcycle. And there was an open house. And so we stop in. The agent's name's Amir, and he came out of Dubai. So I took two things from him. The first thing I took is they are scraping 1950s homes off the sides of the hills and rebuilding, right? So they go in. They're like, oh, 1950s home. Buy it for $1.5 million. Scrape. Build a 6,000-square-foot two-story, put it on the market at $7.5 million. Now, as I'm talking to him, I said, who buys this? He's like, oh, I mean, entry-level buyers. Because if you move 3 streets over, this is $15 million. So I asked him about the insurance, and I said, you know, what's insurance on a house like this? You're in the hills, you're behind Hollywood, et cetera. He's like, oh, if you can get it, you're looking at $100,000 a year probably. He said a deal would be $60,000 a year. So you're into it for $7.5 million on the house, and now you're into it for $60,000 to $100,000 just on the insurance annually. You know, and that is, first I was like, who's buying these? And then second, of course,
you're— And the taxes.
And the taxes on top of it all. So it's just mind-blowing to see how expensive it is. But then you come here, and in our own economy, we're having the same problem, right? One of my friends who's a realtor that we know, she goes out, she had insurance at $2,800, boom, $4,000. So now she's shopping it, and so she's like, okay, well, I can't afford that. Now she's down to $3,200, but there's stuff, you know, if you're on an income that matters, these hit you and you can't change that.
Mm-hmm.
You take $1,000 a year on and then groceries and the rest of this, there's a real affordability problem that starts to enter the equation on stuff we can't work around. Shelter, food, gas, insurance, that's a problem.
Oh, yeah, but inflation's going down.
Inflation's going down.
And they have all these stats that come out of Wall Street, which is great. Well, this is down this. But for shelter, we don't use shelter.
We don't like using that because that doesn't help us out.
Yeah, yeah. So it's smoke and mirrors. And it's funny, you talk to people on Main Street. I don't talk to anybody who's happy with the conditions of groceries, gas, going out to eat, the cost of things like that. And then you throw in the topic we didn't even talk about. Oh, HOA. You live in HOA? Chances are it probably has doubled.
It's either doubled or they're dissolving it, right? Because they're going, look, we can't afford insurance as an HOA. We're going to dissolve it. Everybody's taking care of their own units now.
Yeah.
And we're seeing that. Or we're seeing HOAs go from 250, 300, 350, 400 to 600.
Yeah.
just to make up for the insurance side of the house. And again, these are fixed costs that people weren't planning on in an economy that, quite honestly, is not seeing wages rise with that, right? That's the real problem. We don't have a cost affordability issue if wages were keeping up with it. And that's really, I think, the topic that people are missing in all this is interest rates aren't a big deal if you've got a great economy.
Yeah.
Nobody cares about interest rates if you can afford them. They count because we're not seeing that wage increase. And we're feeling that in real estate, right? Our buyers, when we're talking to them, are nervous. I think they're nervous on one side because it's like, wow, this payment's going to be $4,000 a month? And then you're like, yeah. And then the other side of that is for the first time ever since I've been in business, rents are significantly less than a mortgage now, right?
Oh, yeah.
So 3 years ago, we're like, look, why rent when we can literally buy a house and you will be break even or save money? Now you have to sit there with somebody and educate them on maybe buying's not exactly the right time for you because you can now rent this house for $1,000 a month in the payment.
Yeah,
because your interest rates are up.
Yeah, it's totally right. I just had one at Stetson Hills. We rented out. It was $2,400 to own that home. Would have been about, on a VA loan, $4,000. And I got a military couple, special forces, great job.
Right.
And he's going, why would I buy the house? $1,600. And guess what? Now they're going to look at giving them a credit if you're renting.
That's correct.
So you get a tax credit. And for most homeowners with the new standard deduction, we used to say, hey, here's the benefit of homeownership. You're right off your interest.
Not the case.
Not the case.
Not the case. And it's hard to look at that and tell somebody, well, you should still buy. Now, I know that the industry as a whole is always bullish on housing. And I am not stating that housing's a bad investment. Mm-hmm. But there are times in our history that maybe a pause on thinking about buying a house is at least something to think about. And if I'm sitting there and I'm like, hey, Justin, would you like to buy a house? Or for the next year, you could rent, save your $1,500 a month or $1,200 a month.
Build up more of
and just see where this thing is headed, right?
Get out of the election year.
You get out of the election year. See what's happening across the board. We missed GDP yesterday, right? That was huge news.
Yep.
The stock market got hit pretty good. It's now starting to come back, but
should be down way further.
Way further down. But then when you start looking at the hitters that are coming out, right? Jamie Dimon Chase. He comes out and basically tells the government, "Hey, look,
you got a problem.
The soft landing is looking not likely with your spending."
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if people don't recognize Jamie Dimon being the CEO of Chase, they should understand that Chase is also basically one of the owners of our Federal Reserve, right? They're a central bank.
Yeah.
So he is talking from the aspect of being able to understand this stuff internally, and he's going, look, soft landing, that's we're spending that away. We're making Americans' lives harder, which is...
You're just putting more Band-Aids on, pushing it down the road.
Eventually... You spend $11 trillion here and $1 trillion there, and each hit of money has less of an effect.
Yep.
And that's a problem, and that's a problem with housing here. I mean, we've just made housing here very unaffordable.
Yeah, 100%. Folks, you're going to hear from ABC News. You're listening to Extra Carrier News Radio. We'll be right back. All right, folks, thanks for sticking with us. We are going to get to and if we don't get to the NAR settlement, what's going on with real estate commissions, we're going to have the show next week, and we're going to hit it, okay? So if we get off track, just bear with us. It's all good information because there's a lot of changes at the state level here. I'm talking with Patrick Muldoon, and we were talking about people who maybe shouldn't be purchasing houses. I've told a lot of people, it's not that I'm telling you, it's not a good time to buy. It's just you should be extremely cautious at right now if you're looking to purchase a home, unless you just have a ton of disposable income. And then it's sad, too, to see so many people getting pushed into purchasing who don't understand the product they're even getting, whether it be a 2-1 buy down, an adjustable rate mortgage. They don't understand on a new build what the taxes are going to adjust to the following year. And a lot of people should be told the opposite. We were talking about that. Hey, maybe it's better rent and save some more money and get in a little bit better position before you go and purchase a home.
It's much easier to get out of a lease if you had to.
Yeah.
Right? If things change, that's an easier way to move out of housing, move out of the state, get transferred.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things we were saying 2 years ago, if you remember, was marry the house and date the rate. And I remember when that post first hit. Now, obviously, with a little bit of time under my belt, I went through 2001, I went through 2008, right? And the thing that both those recessions taught me is there's an unpredictability that we should not be saying absolutes like that. Because my argument in 2022 was, but what if rates don't drop. You've set this person up for failure, which none of us saw the escrow changes coming like they did either, right? Nobody was predicting the insurance and the taxes to balloon as well. So now they hit a point jump, and now they hit the escrow change, and you've put somebody into a house who was literally thinking, well, in 2023, I'm just going to refinance. My lender or my realtor said this was a possibility. This was a short-term fix.
Rates will drop next year.
They're going to be fine. You're just refinancing.
And you're betting against history, really, because if the most similar time frame is back 1978 into the 80s, what happened? They thought they had inflation under control. Then they said, holy smokes, we got to floor it and bring it all the way up to 18% in 1982.
Correct.
So you're actually betting against what history would tell you.
Plus, absolutes always worry me. Yeah. Because when you're looking at absolutes and somebody's banking their future on that, that's a problem. And many people said, well, you know, I was told that these were going to drop. Now you're into 2024. Look, and we went from October of 2023 looking at six interest rate drops by the Fed to by December, they're like, well, maybe it's four, to now they're what, one or two? Yeah.
And they wouldn't even do them if it wasn't an election.
And that's a short-term rate. That's not on the 10-year, which is what our 30 years are based off of. That thing is going up as we speak, right? I log in every morning and check the 10-year yield. I'm like, oh, 4.7, that is.
Yeah.
That's a real pickle. And you can physically feel it if you're a realtor right now. You can feel when their interest rates drop because all of a sudden you get showings. And then when they go up, it's like everybody has to take a breather and go, "What? Wait, what's going on?"
Yeah.
And that's just because I think everybody is tight. And we haven't seen these interest rates for so long.
Well, right. And the house prices to match them, because it is tough. You talk to somebody and goes, oh, well, I remember back in my day, and I get it. I wasn't around. I wasn't born when interest rates were
18%. Back in my day, these rates were 18%, and we were still selling houses. I'm like, yeah, but houses weren't where they're at.
Because they're $60,000.
What people don't understand, right, is house pricing up until the manipulation of mortgage rates after the crash, and interest rates danced. You can see it. Interest rates go up, housing pricing pulled out. This was a dance. You never had this discrepancy. We have never, in the history of the world, ever bought mortgage-backed securities to keep rates artificially low at 2.5%, 3.5%. Then stopped doing that, where we then run interest rates up immediately like a hockey stick, right? That was the fastest rate hiking we've ever gone through. The 10-year jumps, and then we chased the highest appreciation. Mm-hmm. Right, so house prices appreciate at record levels, and then we chase that with interest rates. It's uncharted territory. That's why I think people should be very cautious, is we have never done this. We have no examples of what we've done in history.
Yeah.
Now we're about to find out what that does, and that's where I, you know, people are like, well, the recession's not here yet. I'm like, well, I'd argue maybe it is.
Yeah.
Even in housing, right, because we're selling so few units right now, I would say, sure, maybe if we look at house prices, maybe we wouldn't call that a recession. But if we were a business, and I said this for the Colorado Association of Realtors, if you're a business and you and I were selling widgets, and last year we sold 10,000 widgets at a buck, but this year we sold, let's say, 700 at a buck, have we made more or less money? So across the industry, we've wiped out a ton of money in sales, a ton of money in contracting, a ton of money in building. So despite values holding year over year for March, let's say, We sold 14% less homes. That to me is going, well, something's wrong here. Great. I would guess most people would rather, A, sell some more homes, right? Especially if you're in our industry. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, we would love some inventory to loosen up. More importantly, I'm pretty sure buyers would like the opportunity to buy homes.
Yeah.
So you're kind of gridlocked in this situation. But we're in uncharted territory. We've never had this 7.5%, 6.5%.
Yeah, well, I think they had to raise them so fast, Patrick, because they're going, we're approaching recession. If we got to have a little bit of room to bring them down, and we haven't got them high enough to
totally agree
to bring them down possibly too. But I do have one theory, and I want to ask you this, because this is a theory I believe in, and you tell me if I'm wrong. Okay, so this whole thing of, we like to always paint a rosy picture. Prices going up, prices are still going up, and over the last year, and maybe even longer, we've had these incredible buy downs, right? So you have a new build at 550. The builder's spending $50,000, buy down the rate, right? So we have a recording of that sale at 550.
Yep.
But it really transferred at 500.
It's a 10% reduction.
Yeah.
I mean, if you were to look at it.
Yeah, but we don't record that.
We don't.
Because we don't record concessions. Even on resale, before things got tighter again, I mean, we were giving out $20,000 for a rate buy down and giving all these closing costs. So I've questioned people. I go, maybe prices have gone down actually in the last year, but we're seeing the data is showing prices are up because we have a 10% differential between these seller concessions or builder concessions that no one's accounting for, because I've seen some neighborhoods, and not all zip codes are created equal, but I could argue some neighborhoods where you're going, well, that house was, you know, I have a rental property in Divine Redeemer, and I saw it, I was going, geez, neighbors are just sold a house for $500,000. Well, then down the street, you know, 6 months ago, they sold for like $430,000. And so there's some data you look at and go, huh. And it's tough to look at the data and examine it all, but I kind of argue, I think prices have gone down.
Yeah, well, what's I mean, statistically, they have. So if you know Rob Thompson, he runs data all the time. So from the peaks, 2022, we're definitely pulled back. You are correct on the concessions. And the interesting thing with this is very different than what we did in 2008, 9, 7, right? In that time, we were giving basements away. It seemed like if you went out to Claremont, Richmond was giving big ads into or dropping prices. I think what they learned through that situation was, whoa, we can't destroy our neighborhood.
Yeah.
We're going to do these huge buy downs. The interesting thing is, as appraisers go too, they stopped counting them. First, you couldn't necessarily know what a builder currently is buying it down because they're not recording it. Second, if it's normal for the area, the appraisers don't really take that into account. The person who's going to find out about that and is finding about that is, well, Patrick and Justin have a couple houses down the street from the builder. My house is at $525,000. The new build's at $540,000 with 10% in different concessions, and I can't compete with that because I can't offer that. So then I think that person in that new home built, they're a real example of, hey, we got a problem, and I've got a house in a new home subdivision where a builder is building, and that's exactly what I took into account. I said, well, look, this house sold for $465,000 new. They had $26,000 in concessions. And they, if you use the preferred lender, it was 4.9%. I can't compete with that at 7.5%. There's got to be a value deduction there. And so for my broker's price opinion, I deducted value for that. I said, look, we've got at least a $30,000 swing here in order to try to level these two properties up. So this person who bought this, though, with a real loan at, let's say, 450, is mine's coming on probably at 400, 410.
Yeah, to make up for that.
To make up for that. So then that will be a comp in the future in that new subdivision. Meanwhile, that builder is, that was their last property. So you're going to go from this comp as a new build with 4.9 with 26 in to mine hitting the market. That's a huge difference.
Yeah, and I think you're exactly right. I mean, it's just, I just think that sometimes it's a little too rosy of a picture. And the fact is, and I wrote into one of the journalists here in town who wrote the article, and I just said, hey, man, I just think you should dig in a little bit on these buy-downs and how much they are.
All right.
And how much, like 10% of the home value
10%
is a buy-down. I'm not saying that this, like, okay, it would be too tough to calculate all those stats. I'm not saying, hey, let's go do this and try to calculate all of it. It's just, hey, maybe you throw that in the article that some of the data could be a little skewed because there's a significant amount of buy downs.
Not only that, we've got a bell curve, in my opinion, on sales, right? Because an agent in my office lists an $800,000 house under contract in 2 days.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Then I list a $770,000 under contract in 2 weeks. I list an $850,000 under contract in 10 days, right? I list a $400,000, sits and sits and sits. And so that price point is not, we're not getting a real, if everything we're selling is at the top of the bell curve and the things that are sitting and aren't selling are down here, we're getting a skewed valuation of that. So I think if you just went in and said, okay, well, what if these sold at these prices and then withdraw again? I think you get a very different picture of the Colorado Springs market. And what we are seeing is a huge discrepancy in those two price points. The people with money have money. They're still buying.
Mm-hmm.
And the people that are looking at, like, I can't afford this, aren't. And so that price point at 400, 385, that's sitting. Everything I had in the upper, gone. I mean, gone. It was like,
yeah.
So if those are sold data, and that's what we're trying to compensate for. Now, if you looked at March's numbers, the thing I found interesting year over year was down 14% on sales, right? Break even on values.
Mm-hmm.
And we're up 13.4% on active listings.
Mm-hmm.
So you're starting to see this, what could be a change, right? This could be a market change if we continue to push our listings up. Our added inventory, and we continue to not sell houses, you're going to see at some point in time a seller who bought in 2017 who has not leveraged their property go, well, I still need to move, and I can drop this $50,000 and still walk away at $200,000.
Yeah.
And that will start changing neighborhoods if that happens, right now most people are in this, and you're meeting with sellers. Well, I think this year will be better. You know, we'll just wait till spring. Well, we're in spring, and year over year, we're not better. And I'm stressing to sellers, like, don't look a gift horse in the mouth.
Yeah.
If you do need to sell, it's still a good opportunity. Your risk reward of waiting is now starting to trend against you. People may disagree with me. I know the industry sometimes does. They hashtag me all gloom for a reason. But the fact of the matter is, we end up with a two-year window. The 2 years started June 2022. When rate hikes and monetary policy tightens, it's 24 months before things start going tragically wrong. This is historically true through every recession. The 2008, 2001, 1927 to 1929, it's 2 years. It takes a long time for that money to get sucked out of the system where things start becoming more volatile. Yeah,
it doesn't happen immediately.
We saw that last year, right? We saw banks collapse and everybody was like, it's fine. Well, we saw that in 2007 too. If people were here in 2007, you'd remember secondary mortgage market started to get into trouble in 2008, we would start the year. So if we were sitting here in 2008, you and I, we would literally be having almost the same conversation. We would sit there and say, Ben Bernanke would have reported in January, 4.3% unemployment, strong economy, tech is going to keep us going, manufacturing is fine. That is January of the year that we collapsed in September. By 2009, we're almost at 10% unemployment. So you see, first quarter of 2009, it's a hockey stick if you look at it, right? Unemployment goes very quickly, which is why I think you've got two Achilles heels to housing. First, inventory. In the areas that we're adding inventory across this nation, house prices are adjusting very rapidly to the downside. Austin, parts of Florida now, right? They've seen a 400% increase in inventory. We haven't yet. So the other thing, unemployment. If we see unemployment spike, like we did then, most people think it was a subprime crisis. It was really unemployment spiked. You can't run 10% unemployment and have people keep their houses.
Yeah.
So we got into some trouble there. But literally right now in 2008, we'd be having the same conversation. We'd be like, well, I mean, the market seems pretty good. I mean, yeah. The only thing we're missing is foreclosures. Well, the government's manipulating that. We know this. And that's not tinfoil at.
Yeah, no, I know. I agree with you on that. We got 2 minutes left. I believe rental prices are coming down. They've leveled. I'm certainly renting homes that I rented before for, I say, $2,600, like that home in Stetson Hills. We're now renting it for $2,400. I think the market naturally corrects itself. Are you seeing the same thing on your guys' rental properties? Things sitting vacant for a little longer?
Yeah, absolutely. They're not only sitting vacant longer, but let's take into account that you've got, what, like 10,000 units coming online this year in El Paso County. That's apartments and multifamily that are not finished. That's just going to put more pressure. And I know the people in the single family world are like, won't affect me. It does. It does. People will rent where they can afford. And if apartments have to get cheaper, people will live in an apartment.
Yeah. Do you think it's just massive overbuild? They want $2,500 for the ones down at Widener. For a two bedroom.
At a 50 year high across this nation on multifamilies. That's the simple truth. So nationwide, we've got a lot of onboarding of multifamily and apartments coming online. That's going to compete directly with the rental market.
Yeah. And I don't see $2,500 for a two bedroom.
I think that's going to be very difficult to maintain.
I mean, I really don't. I think those numbers are off, and there's a reason why the guys who don't have a shovel yet in the ground, a lot of them, you talk to regional building, are going, we're going to pause on this.
Look, 2024 hedge funds are net sellers now, not net buyers.
Yeah.
What do they know?
Yeah. 100%. Yeah, no, I mean, I agree with you, Patrick. So yeah, that's something I did want to, because people go affordability and go, what? Rents are, They're coming down. I mean, we're not 2 years ago where I was getting 10 applications and people were, it's like, okay, this is more normal. Great. I'm glad it's more normal.
And the housing market for sale is actually competing with the rental market, as we discussed. So you've got two weird things that we just haven't really had before, which is like, well, I mean, I could buy, but I'd rather rent.
Yeah.
Well, when has that been the case?
I know.
It's crazy.
Yeah, it's wild.
It's an interesting time.
Yeah, Patrick, thanks for coming on. Folks, tune in next Friday. We're actually going to talk about what we said we're going to talk about next Friday.
I can't wait. I think this is a great topic.
Yeah, okay.